ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। तस्यायाम अन्यया यासीत् परेभ्यो वह पराभवः, प्रक्षिणेभ्यः वा वैरिभ्यः समृद्धानं च यत्सुरः। तस्यायाम् अन्यया यासीत् परेभ्यो वः पराभवः, प्रक्षिणेभ्यः स्ववैरिभ्यः समृद्धानं च यत्सुरः।
Krishna purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Because of your misbehavior toward Brihaspati, you have been defeated by the demons, my dear demigods. Since the demons were weak, having been defeated by you several times, how else could you, who were so advanced in opulence, be defeated by them? Purport. The Devas are celebrated for fighting with the Asuras perpetually. In such fights, the Asuras were always defeated. But this time, the demigods were defeated. Why? The reason as stated here was that they had offended their spiritual master. Their impudent disrespect of their spiritual master was the cause of their defeat by the demons. As stated in the Shastras, when one disrespects a respectable superior, one loses his longevity and the results of his pious activities, and in this way one is degraded. We have been reading about the behavior of Indra towards the spiritual master, Brihaspati, and the results which incurred upon all the demigods because of neglect, disrespectful behavior of Indra towards his worshipable spiritual master. The subject of discussion for a couple of days has been on the importance of respecting devotees, having respectable attitudes in our heart. And this is so close and so very important for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that it is worth discussing it repeatedly for deeper and deeper appreciation of this very important principle of Amanina Manadena. It can never be overemphasized, but only adequately emphasized in our own hearts. Why? Because by very nature, when we examine our hearts within, we see inherently we, almost all of us, have an offensive mentality. We may not be offensive always with other people, but that mentality is often there inside. It may manifest sometimes, but it is almost always there within. So what is within, it is very likely to come out with sufficient amount of provocation. So unless that mentality is dealt with deeply from within our heart, that lurking danger of always misbehaving or speaking wrong things or thinking wrong things about respectable personalities is always a potential danger in a devotee's life. So even though bhakti is simple on one side, because it only involves chanting the holy names of the Lord, but it becomes difficult because of this offensive mentality. If this were not there, then bhakti would be extremely simple to perfect in a very short time. But practically, one of the most important obstacles which comes is battling with this anartha of offensive mentality, which is deeply rooted in the anartha of pride. It is a manifestation of pride. So, when you think of the two, if you think of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the two greatest wars in this world of Mahabharata and Ramayana, basically rooted in offense. The Bhagavatam begins with offense, in fact. The whole scripture came as a result of Sringi, this Brahman, offending a Paramahamsa Mahabhagavat Vaishnava like Maharaj Parikshit, doing a very inauspicious activity. As the purport says here, that when that happens, there is degradation. The last word of Prabhupada is degradation. So, this must be so powerful, even though we may not fully, within our own hearts, realize the magnitude of the problem. We all have a general understanding that offenses are bad and we should not do that. We all understand in a general sense that this is something which I should avoid. But truly these verses and the discussions help to understand how massive is this problem. That a particular person offending a particular another person, Sringi and Parishmaharaj, and the entire Brahmanical race becomes corrupted. All the Brahmins henceforth, after that offense, became degraded. That was the beginning of the fall down of the most respectable people in this world. We have Shudras, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Brahmanas, the most respectable people in society. For millions of years, that was the culture. But the degradation of the entire caste system, which the Lord Himself has devised, began in Kali Yuga with this one person offending Parikshit Maharaj. And we can see the impact is that even today, that slide down, or the slide down has, you know, the fall down is going on and on and on and on. And the Brahmins have become demoniac, practically. What to talk of becoming Dvija Bandhus, they become completely demoniac. So that's how the powerful offense is. That means that the impact of the fallout is like the bomb may fall in one place, in one particular section of a city, or in a particular hospital, or an electrical tower, or whatever else, or a radio station. But the fallout, the sound waves impact, and the nuclear fallout, that affects, you know, a large volume of area. Sometimes whole cities are wiped out. And the impact continues, like you have a nuclear bomb, which in Hiroshima took place in 1940. But even still recently, we were hearing that the progeny born of such injured parents were even still being born with mutations in their limbs and things like that. So even 60, 70 years down the line, the genetic codes are disturbed because of the fallout of the radioactivity at that time. That means the impact is long-lasting. So Sringi did something, you know, 5,000 years ago, and today we are still reaping the results of that offense. The whole Brahminical culture is practically wiped out in the entire planet. It doesn't exist. And Prabhupada is probably the first person in so many years who is again, by his movement, reviving the authenticity and the respectability of the Brahminical class. Dharma, Artha, Yashaha, Suta. There are various things happen which, you know, when a person offends another, especially a Vaishnav. As it says here, dharma. Dharma means all pious credits accumulated through devotional work or pious work, even to the extent Sanatana Goswami says, of 100 lifetimes. Somebody who is living for 100 lifetimes, his pious work, obviously is an extremely pious person. But that huge mountain of piety can be destroyed in one moment by just one offense. So we can see how powerful that is. It's very powerful. So today we'll like to see how there have been various examples of personalities from the lowest rungs of degraded souls to the most exalted Vaishnavas who committed Vaishnava aparad. And you will see that the whole spectrum of that behavior from degraded human beings to exalted personalities, all of them are affected by this anartha. So the point of discussion is the universality of this problem. At whatever rank of consciousness one is in, a dacoit on one hand, or even a one who has reached prema bhakti, and anyone in between the two, if he is infected by this sin of pride, it can bring complete fall down. Various examples are there. Of course, talking about dacoits, there are many dacoits who are offenders. Example is given of Jhanava Devi. Jhanava Devi is a Shakti of Nityananda Prabhu. And she was traveling and preaching out of her compassion various villages in Gaudadesh. And she landed up in a place which was occupied by Pashandis or Shaktas. They were like fanatical, we cannot even call devotees, fanatical worshippers of Chandi. So obviously that those type of people are in the lower rungs of consciousness. They are considered as tamoguni personalities who take refuge of tamoguni scriptures to worship Chandi. And when they were saying that high class Brahmins, even Mahabhagavats, were bowing down their heads in front of a woman, they became offensive in their words and said, "What nonsense! Brahmanas are falling down at the feet of a human being. Did not they know the glory of the worship of Mother Chandi? They should all be worshipping Chandi. This is an offense to Chandi that they are disrespecting Mother Chandi and offering obeisances to a mere mortal." And they offended in words. So they thought that they are doing Chandi aparad. So they also have this concept of aparad. Everyone has a concept of aparad in their own given scriptures. So this is Chandi aparad. How can you worship somebody else in front of the greatest goddess? So they had their own concepts. But in the night it is said that Mother Chandi herself is a manifestation of Durga Devi, and she's a great Vaishnavi, being the wife of Lord Shiva. She's Vaishnavi. Vaishnav Devi is a big temple there up in the Himalayas. So when she heard the blasphemy of her worshippers, she became so angry that she manifested herself in all her fury in the dreams of each and every of those Panchandis at night. And with her, when Durga Devi gets angry, she looks very horrifying even when she's not angry. But when she's really angry, the Trishul and her eyes and all those skulls, and we can imagine she's material energy in her, Ugra form, very devastating pralaya feature of Chandi Devi. She threatened them to kill them. Said, "I will chop off your heads and kill all of you, for you have blasphemed the greatest goddess Jhanavadi, whom even I worship. In fact, all demigods worship. For she is none other than the wife of Balram Nityananda." And of course, the next day morning, they become so horrified with this ghastly experience of the night, like a nightmare for them, and they surrender their lives to Jhanava Devi. So that's about dacoits. That's very common. In Prabhupada's times also, we had so many demoniac people, the New Age brainwashing team of deprogrammers, who are similar type of dacoits actually, who for the sole purpose of earning some cheap amount of money, they did such horrible activities towards practicing devotees, and of course they were destroyed. And of course we see also that even if somebody is not just a dacoit but in a higher rank of a person, a pious person, or even a yogi or a muni. We have Bhrigu Muni, for example. The Bhrigumuni is an exalted personality, exalted Brahman himself. But of course, he did a deliberate offense. In his story with the interaction with the Brahmaji, Shivji and Vishnu, we see what offenses can be. At three levels of offenses. As you all know the story, that when he went first towards Brahma, he didn't speak anything but just did not offer his respects to him as a father. That was just mental offense. Where Shivji committed a verbal offense of criticizing him as a person who's staying in crematoriums and is unclean and staying with ghosts and with snakes and all that. So he did some verbal offense. So that's higher. And Shivji reacted proportionately by wanting to kill him. And when Vishnu hit it, even a more third degree offense, the first degree, second degree, third degree offense of kicking his feet on Lord Vishnu's divine chest. And of course, the reaction was not what he expected. Vishnu just, smiled at him and said, "Oh, wonderful, you have come to my abode." But anyway, here you have three offenses being committed. In the example of this example I'm quoting to show that offenses can be at three levels. In this example, he did not, in Indra, just disrespectfully, he did not, offer his respects in a physical way. So that is the first beginning. At least physically we should respect. But it all begins from our mind. It is not just sufficient to show a physical act of respect. But one can be very disrespectful in the mind. And Krishna, of course, sees not how the body moves in pranams, sastak dandvat pranams, but the Lord is seeing within the heart what is his behavior within. So there is components of respects at the external level, and there is also internal component. That means respect has to be at all three levels. When you say I respect somebody, it is not that I just get up when he comes, or I bow down when he comes, or I say hari bol to him and say welcome sir and please sit down. That is the bare minimum of respect. But there is much more component of respect which comes from the, which is in the heart. So, if that is not in place, and we are only practicing the external acts of respect, then we are gullible for the offense of hypocrisy. That we are only externally respecting, but we really don't mean to really respect that person. And we embrace them, maybe sometimes we embrace and Hari Bol Prabhu and this and that. But we don't really actually, within our hearts, deeply have respect for that person as a Vaishnav. So, along with the act of physical appreciation and bowing down on the platform and saying Prabhu, there has to be a whole lot of genuine respect from within the heart that this is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. And therefore, in the Lord's eyes, he is the most exalted person. Because the Lord himself respects him, how much more I should respect him. One should not disrespect a respectable person, respectable superior, right? So now, of course, here, even though we are often talking about Vaishnava Aparad, the definition of Aparad should be very broad. Prabhupada said, actually, that we should respect everyone. In the definition of respect, as given in the second Shishtashtakam, Amanina Manadena is not only for Vaishnavas. Obviously, Mahaprabhu is not a narrow-minded person who says you respect Vaishnavas and disrespect everybody else. It's a very broad and all-encompassing definition. Respect everyone and expect respect from no one. Now, we can see it's a very tall order. It's not an easy thing. It begins at least by respecting the people who are very respectable because they are pious, they are following principles and chanting God's names and worshipping the deities and they're leading, moral lives. At least it begins by respecting people who are obviously respectable because of their lifestyle. It begins, that's the beginning. But that's not the end. Otherwise, we will be all having a double standard type of activity where we are respectable to our devotees and when we go out in the world, we're very disrespectful towards maybe our parents, towards our other superiors and therefore, people say, oh, are you a devotee? Is this how you behave? Is this how you talk? People often tell about devotees like this, is it not? That we thought you people were devotees and look at how you are talking, look at how you are behaving. That means we are probably sometimes just narrow segmented towards respecting only the Vaishnava community. and disrespect our bosses or superiors or grandparents or our wives sometimes and children and other people. Gaur Govind Maharaj said in his one of his lectures that actually we should respect everybody. Why? There's a reason. Someone said, why should I respect everybody? You know, he's not a Vaishnava. He's a demonic person. He's degraded. Why should I respect him? Is there a good reason to respect such a person? He has no good qualities. When we say, I must respect, we see something worthy of respect, therefore we respect. Somebody respectable because he has got knowledge. Somebody respect because he has got a lot of opulence of money and wealth. Oh, sir, you are CEO of so-and-so company. So we respectably, you know, greet him and feel some respect for him within the heart. So respect is given where we see a quality which is, worthy of respect. Now when you talk of degraded souls or maybe the ant or the, you know, cockroach or whatever, other species, what is worthy of respect in an ant? Is there anything respectable in an ant or a cockroach? There's nothing. There's nothing respectable in an ant on the external platform. But Gaur Govind Maharaj, this great Vaishnava, he says that we must respect even the ant or even the cockroach or even every other species because actually everyone is a devotee of Krishna. And he quoted by saying, Jivara Swarup Hoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. Every Jivatma is actually a servant of Krishna. Even the ant is a servant of Krishna. In the ant body, somehow, karmic reaction, they become an ant or something else. Huh? But everyone is actually eternally serving Sri Krishna. And they may be in different external forms for a temporary, you know, reaction they are incurring because of their activities. So, Amanina Mana Dena is a very powerful mandate which the devotees carry on their hearts and their shoulders. And it's something which we will have to recurrently practice to be really called as Vaishnavas. To be called as Vaishnavas, as we may think ourselves to be within our hearts, that, I'm a Vaishnava. Vaishnava, yeah, that's me. You're talking about me? Okay, what is it? So now when we say Vaishnava, we immediately say, that's me. Is it not? We feel like that. I'm a Vaishnava. Right? But to be really, to be qualified to be actually a Vaishnava, this is the mandate. When we can really Amanina Manadina for all living entities, that person is a Vaishnava. Otherwise, we are Vaishnavas, but we can have to, we'll have to then classify as class 1, class 2, class 3 as Prakrita Vaishnavas and Madhyama and like that. So we may at the most qualify as a Prakrita Vaishnava because, you know, we worship Krishna and the deities and, but it's not truly. Anyway, going ahead with our discussion of aparadhas, we see in the case of a yogi, Durvasa Muni, a powerful Siddha yogi, and he offends. So even if you become a yogi, the offensive tendency does not go. That's what I'm trying to say. You may gain powers which are unfathomable for the human mind. Creating personalities from hair. Not many people can do that. We can't create anything from the hair. Except a wig. Maybe just join all the hair together and make a wig. But we can't do anything more than that. But to create a personality from hair obviously requires some supernatural power. To fly to Vaikuntha requires power. But even if you are so powerful to fly to Vaikuntha in no time, the tendency of pride is still not away from your heart. And you see a king as an ordinary king and offend him and want to kill him. In this particular story, two aspects are given. Let's take the story of Daksha offending Lord Shiva and Durvasa Muni offending Ambarish Maharaj. In this story, there is a small thing which is of importance and relevance to us in how dealing with this. It is said that in Daksha's story, even though Daksha actually begged forgiveness from Shiva afterwards, he still became degraded and had a body of a goat and had actually suffered the reaction of his offense. But we see that Durvasa Muni does not suffer any reaction, though both have committed offenses. So what is the difference? why did Durvasa Muni not suffer any reaction? We don't see Durvasa Muni, you know, something going wrong with him or becoming a tree or becoming a... He was the same. Even though he did a very culpable offense of wanting to kill. Daksha was only, you know, verbal. He wasn't trying to kill Shiva. The reason I explain is that even though both begged forgiveness, when it came to giving forgiveness, you know, Shiva forgave and of course Ambarish also forgave. There are two components of forgiveness, it is said. This is for us who may sometimes offend Vaishnavas unknowingly. The components are Kshama and Anugraha. Kshama means you say, okay, I forgive you. Theek hai, I forgive you. That's the first level. That's okay, theek hai, chalega, I don't mind it. And Anugraha, when it comes, he said, when you really actually still are able to get that person's mercy. Example is given that if somebody borrows money from a person, and supposed to pay back the money after some time, in a, you know, stipulated time, and the time is overdue and passes, and he's still not able to pay the money, he goes to the person and said, I'm really sorry. I have not been able to pay your money in time. Please forgive me. That's the first thing. The person says, okay, chalta hai, you know, it's all right. So he's given kshama, I forgive you for not doing it. But if he still does not give, even later, he doesn't get the component of anugraha. When he gives that money, then he gets, okay, then that anugraha comes. Otherwise, it will remain at the first level. He just got forgiveness, but didn't get his mercy. So, in this case, we find that Daksha gets only kshama from Shiva. And still goes, and therefore still he is not having complete relief from his offense and suffers the reaction. While Ambarish Maharaj, because of the extraordinary amount of repentance which he had, Durvasa Muni had, he got his anugraha. Therefore, he did not suffer. So, when we go to a Vaishnava for making an offense, we must see that we fulfill both these components. Not just beg forgiveness in terms of words, but actually say, my dear Prabhu, I still need your mercy. It's not, don't just forgive me. I still want your mercy. And that repentant heart is there. Then that offensive chapter is closed. Otherwise, something is still lingering. So, we find that even in big yogis, but a very powerful example which startled me when I heard for the first time, practically even shook me up from within, was the example of a person in Prema Bhakti becoming offensive. Now, we would generally consider that, okay, it's for neophytes, you know, because most of us are neophytes, I'm a neophyte, so I tend to offend Vaishnavas. We would think that, you know, as you go through Nishtha, then Ruchi, Asakti, Bhav Bhakti, pretty much so much pure that you are free from all these anarthas. Even at Nishtha is already taking place after Anartha Nivritti, is it not? After Anartha Nivritti, the fifth step is Nishtha. So practically all anarthas are sufficiently eliminated. Then you come to Nishtha. And then what you talk of Ruchi? You get a taste, a positive taste. We don't have to really force it up to 16 rounds. We just get a taste for Harinam and for Vaishnav Seva. We get a taste. And what about asakti? We become attached to Krishna strongly. We become attached to devotees. We become attached to devotional service. Asakti. And what about bhav bhakti? You start even get ecstatic symptoms at bhav bhakti. You start rolling and you're crying in ecstasy. Yugaitam nimeshena chakshusha pravrashaitam. That's bhav bhakti. And then higher than that is prema bhakti. But you have an example in the Shastra which is very important for us of Rupa Kaviraj, who was on the level of developing the preliminary stages of Prema Bhakti. And he becoming degraded to the level of a ghost. From way high of the top rungs of most exalted consciousness, where you are manifesting ecstatic symptoms, to becoming degraded to become a degraded species of a ghost. So we need to all hear attentively how this really happened. The story is about Rupa Kaviraj, who was the godbrother of Vishnu Chakri Thakur's Param Guru. Vishnu Chakri Thakur's guru is Radharaman Chakravarti, and his guru is Sri Krishna Charan Acharya. So, Rupa Kaviraj was the godbrother of Chakravarti Thakur's spiritual master. Anyway, he was personally trained in bhakti by the great Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who's the greatest Rasika Acharya. Under his tutelage, he had learned so much of scripture. He had read Srimad Bhagavatam thoroughly well, mastered the Vaishnava Siddhanta so beautifully. He was living in a very, very holy place, the holiest of all places, in fact, that is Sri Radha Kund. And he was so much worshipped and favored and loved and respected by the entire Brijvasi community living in that area for his superb explanations on the deepest aspects of Vaishnava Siddhanta. The story goes that when he was doing that one day, preparing for his class, sitting on the dais, he is visited by a very, very exalted personality. A great woman comes. Her name is Krishna Priya. Krishna Priya is the divine daughter of Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. Ganga Narayan Chakravarti is one of the most powerful disciples of Narottam Das Thakur. And she is the personification of pure devotional service. Her heart is filled with the most exalted qualities of love for Radha and Krishna. And she comes to that arena to hear Rupa Kaviraj speak. Everyone gets up knowing that she is even in senior in age and far senior in bhakti, daughter of Ganganayan Chakravarti. She is very exalted personality. So they get up in respect and offer. Rupa Kaviraj does not get up to offer respects. He just sees her and continues to do his work. Anyway, it doesn't end there. He starts speaking. And way back among the group, obviously in the front, men sit and the men, women sit behind. So she's sitting way behind. But she had a very typical type of nature, a divine nature, where she would never stop chanting. She was already in the platform of Kirtane Sadahari. So no matter what she is doing, she had a bead bag and she was always chanting. Even when hearing a class, obviously we can't imitate that. We cannot chant when the class, but she can because, you know, she's on that platform. So she's sitting way behind, she's chanting Hare Krishna and she's hearing the class. So Rupa Kaviraj, he's seeing, he's having eye contact with everybody in the audience and he's seeing how everyone is focused on what he's saying and everyone is reciprocating, nodding his head, I'm sure. And he said, yeah, they're all understanding what I'm saying. And he looks, glances way behind and sees that this Mataji is chanting, or not rather chanting, he could not even hear what, but she's muttering something. And he interrupts the class suddenly and slams at her and said, you there! Are you hearing me or are you chanting? What are you doing? How can you do two activities at the same time? She is not at all in the least offended by this stark, strong, angered comment of Rupa Kaviraj. She just says, my dear sir, this is my uncontrolled habit to always chant. But please note that I am in rapt attention of what you are saying and I am relishing your lecture very well. So I am not inattentive to what you are saying. I am focused. So no, these great souls can do two things. They can chant and they can hear. We can't do that. We can even not chant when we are chanting. What to talk of? So, you know, at even that time you are doing two things or three things or four things. But obviously we can't chant and hear. This is way beyond our capacity. So, she just is very humble and is very soft-spoken and she takes no offense whatsoever. But Rupa Kaviraj continues to blaspheme her. So this is an offense. You are disrespectful. And that is the beginning of a massive fall of a person who is way high at Radha Kund in Prema Bhakti to degradation. After that, he began offending even more Vaishnavas. that tendency had now captured his heart. Like an infection. You know, a few bacteria may enter. And if your body is weak, the bacteria can even now multiply and grow because you are known to have much defense mechanisms in place. So now that his offensive mentality was established, he didn't have much of internal devotional credits to counteract that offensive mentality. And the offensive mentality even further increased. And he began offending now not one person but many people. The next step was deviation from philosophy. And that was the third, the further degradation. He began concocting his own philosophy and saying that it is not important to do Shravan and Kirtan. More important than Shravan is Smaran. So he started propagating loudly and strongly the Smaran path of Bhakti, in opposition to Mahaprabhu's emphasis on Shravan and Kirtan as the main pillars of Navida Bhakti. And then went on like that. But as he went on doing these deviations, people could detect that his bodily luster had vanished. Somebody on Prema Bhakti platform is very, because of his divinity, anybody can see that very clearly. We can see people and we can, even in ordinary people like us, we can judge where people are by just looking at them. Somebody who's on the exalted platform of Prema Bhakti looks with an aura. There's an aura around him. But people could see that in no time, the aura had disappeared and his body had become, he lost his luster. The next degradation which took place was his body contacted leprosy. And everyone could see that he is in a mess. The next thing was his digestion went completely haywire. He lost his digestive power. He couldn't eat anything. So his body started shriveling down even further. He couldn't stay at Radhakund anymore. He ran away from that place. He went to a spiritual master. Because of his now hypocritical nature, who's trying to hide his... He started behaving as a spiritual master as if everything is all right. But everyone could see that things are completely in a mess with this person's life. So his Guru Maharaj rejected him. Didn't accept him because he's an offender to Krishna Priya and he had become an offender to Vaishnavas and he was a deviant, deviated from the Gaudiya Siddhanta. And he runs away to Orissa. And there, the leprosy becomes so much, it corrupts his body. It practically, his body is destroyed by this leprosy. Leprosy is a very powerful disease. It can melt away even the bones of a person. You know, find people, his fingers. You have seen many of the lepers, you know, losing their bones. It can melt away even bones. That's how powerful this bacteria is. It eats away everything. And that doesn't end there. He dies a miserable death and turns even further. It goes on even further, as you say, down. And now he turns into a ghost. And a ghost who starts haunting people who offend others. So when people would get haunted, they would know, I must have offended a devotee because this is Rupa Kaviraj in my body. That's the type of slide down he had. From where? From a Prema Bhakti platform. When I heard this for the first time from Radhanath Swami, I was completely shaken up. Because we heard so many people offending, you know, this offend, that offend. You know, but usually it's among yogis and this and Daksha. You know. These are powerful stories, obviously, but you know, Daksha is not a pure devotee. You know, he's a pious man, he's a powerful man. But here is a person who's very high. And look at what's happened to him. So that happens. And of course, we'll end the class by talking about another pastime. It's also not an offensive pastime, of offensive subject. But a very sweet pastime still. We should add on a sweet note. So we don't carry some bitterness in our heart. This is about offenses between two great personalities, Sachi Mata and Advaita Acharya. But the point is still there that Sachi Mata offended once, unknowingly, Advaita Acharya. She said that this Advaita, this is Dvaita, he's full of duplicity. You know, Advaita, he's Dvaita, he's full of duplicity. Because under his association, I lost my son, Vishwarupa, who by his association became so much detached from this material world, and he took sannyas. And now he is even going to probably, in the similar way, influence my second son, Vishwambar, to take sannyas. So she had committed this offense in her mind towards Advaita Acharya. So we find in Mahaprabhu's pastime, sometimes he would sit on the throne of Vishnu in the house of Srivas Thakur at Srivas Angan and take all the Shalagram Shilas on his lap and manifest his opulent form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He would very infrequently do this. He would always be in the mood of bhakta, a devotee. But sometimes among these very intimate devotees, he would do this very special leela of playing the role of the Supreme Lord. And he would give boons and benedictions to anyone who came. And Srivas Thakur said, "My dear Lord, you have given benedictions to everyone. Please give the benediction also of Prem Bhakti to your dear mother, Sachi Mata." Mahaprabhu said, "No. She will never get Prema Bhakti. Because she has committed an offense." Offense? How can she commit an offense? She is your mother. Whatever bhakti you have in you is coming from your mother. How can you say that your mother is offensive? And then he explains that she has done this. This is unless she actually goes and begs forgiveness from Advaita Acharya. This is the point that when you offend a devotee, it is not offend to just, "Oh, I offended him. I feel so sorry. I feel so sorry. I am repentant." That is not enough. Usually we understand by the conscience and by the super soul signal, "Guy, you messed it up. You offended him." So we may feel very repentant in our heart and say, "I should not do this again." But the Lord takes no notice of this as being anything like a serious thing. You have to physically go to that person and fall on his feet and said, "Prabhu." And this time you have to mean that word, "Prabhu." You cannot just say "Prabhu" and say "Prabhu" and say something superficially. So unless that person forgives you, there is no counteraction. It is said there is no pious activity in all the scriptures. And you can go and take bath in the Ganga or give donation of gold or give 1,000 cows or do parikrama of all the chatur, char dhams, whatever else. None of these things really have the power, however great they may be in themselves, to counteract the great offense of Vaishnava Parat. They do not match up with the type of offense, because as much as the offense, so much powerful has to be also the, the antidote, atonement. Yeah. If it has a powerful poison, then it has to be a powerful antidote also. So these pious karma of going here and there, doing pilgrimages and all these things, they're not potent enough to actually counteract Vaishnava Parat, because it is the most powerful of all sins. The greatest sin is Vaishnava Parat. The greatest sin is Guru Aparad. Only that devotee has the power to forgive, and nobody else. In that sense, not even the Lord. He doesn't interfere with this. He said, "I'm out of this. It's not my business to forgive you. You go to that person." And only we find Srivas Thakur was offended by who is that? Gopal? Gopal Chappal. I keep mixing between Gopal Chakravarti and Chakravarti. Two Gopals are there. So he went and begged forgiveness from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was affected by leprosy also. Mahaprabhu said, "You are not going to get any redemption from me. You must go to Srivas Thakur himself." So that's the thing. We have to go to that person anyway. So when Advaita Acharya is told about this, that, Sachi Mata will not carry my bhakti, she actually makes fun of me. What? Prem Bhakti offense towards me? She's my mother. How can a mother beg for forgiveness from her son? And he starts just glorifying, extolling the glories of Sachi Mata in such a beautiful way. And he becomes so absorbed in her glorification that he becomes ecstatically surcharged and he falls down in a swoon of ecstasy, unconscious. And so Sachi Mata just at that time takes opportunity and touches his feet and puts it dust on his head. And Mahaprabhu sees this and says, "Yes. Now we are freed from the offense of offending Nara." Nara is the nickname of Advaita Acharya. And she gets Prema Bhakti. So now bless you with Prema Bhakti. So the Lord wants to, you know, at all points, he does this particular leelas through his wonderful devotees. Obviously, Sashi Mata is not offensive. The acharya did no offense. Nothing was there. It was just a wonderful pastime. But the point is still being made that even at that stage, the Lord restricts his mercy if offense is done. In a similar note, there's another small story about Rupa Goswami. All of you know about the story. We have heard it, that he is absorbed in remembrances of Radha Krishna Nitya Leela within his heart. He's in Samadhi. He's in the mortal world, in the mortal body, mortal frame, but he's absorbed in the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The story is about how Srimati Radharani was once actually picking some flowers, and Krishna comes and stands behind her. And the gopis are all around Krishna, Radharani, and they're, you know, braiding her hair and putting flowers on her, on a beautiful silken hair. And Radharani is unaware that Krishna is standing behind. And then, you know, after your makeup is done, then you, you know, you take a mirror and show. So, are you happy? Like we do Krishna every day in Sringar Darshan. All the pujaris are in the Sringar. My Krishna, are you happy? The mirror is shown to the Lord. So that comes from there. That after the Sringar is done, you know, pujari comes and shows a mirror. Is the makeup to your satisfaction? Is your hair proper? Is your turban piece proper? It's like that. So then, the gopis held that mirror in front of Radharani, and she saw herself and her hair and the flowers, and behind was Shyamsundar Krishna. And she becomes very embarrassed. Oh, Krishna is behind me. And she just blushes. And she hides her face in her sari. And looking at this very sweet pastime, Rupa Goswami smiles and laughs. He laughs. Oh, very nice pastime. See how Radharani is embarrassed. At that exact same point of time, this wonderful Vaishnava called Krishna Das is just passing in front of Rupa Goswami. He's just passing by. By some inconceivable will of the Lord, he's lame. And when he's passing by and he sees Rupa Goswami is laughing, he takes an offense. Rupa Goswami is laughing at my being lame. And he goes and complains to his elder brother, Sanatana Goswami, your brother is laughing at me. You know, what kind of behavior is there from Rupa Goswami? He's such a great soul. Why is he doing this? Sanatana Goswami explains, because Sanatana Goswami knows what Rupa Goswami's character. This is what is really happening. He didn't mean offense to you. He's just lost in some other world. And he becomes repentant. Krishna Das says, oh, I offended him now for taking that offense which is not even there. So he feels very bad and morose that I spoke or felt bad about Rupa Goswami. So he is feeling repentant about that. On the other hand, Rupa Goswami here, his vision of divine Leela is interrupted. And he becomes disturbed. What happened? And he knew that something has gone wrong. I must have offended somebody. So he again, you know, like younger brother goes to the elder brother and said, you know what happened? I was absorbed. And something happened at the interruption. What do you think really happened? Can you tell me? Said, I know what happened. This happened because this devotee felt bad. Therefore, this vision was broken from you. So it was a completely unknowing, unwilling, undeliberated offense. There's nothing there. He didn't even see him. He was seeing something else. So without seeing him, without even acknowledging him, without even knowing his presence, but still somebody took an offense, vision was lost. So, Kaviraj Goswami says, to end the class, that when dealing with Vaishnavas, be very, very careful. Boro Savadhan, the word uses Boro Savadhan. Savadhan, you know, the word Savadhan is known to. Savadhan, yeah, alert. Boro Savadhan, be very alert. Because devotees are very, very special people. And they must be dealt with in a very, very special way also. So, through these beautiful pastimes, we can understand that devotees are very wonderful people. You know, that we have to get, by hearing these stories or talking about these offenses, then we start getting scared of devotees. Oh, I should not offend him. We should not be God-fearing, but God-loving. So, you should not be Vaishnava-fearing, but Vaishnava-loving. When there is love, and there is respect, automatically this. So, Amana Manadena means that when we respect devotees, the respectability towards devotees automatically eliminates the tendency for offense. The more we respect somebody, the less we will offend him, quite naturally. And the less we respect somebody, the more we are likely to offend him. Is it not? So, the only antidote for avoiding this offensive behavior is to develop within our hearts the understanding of the glorious position of a Vaishnava. What is a Vaishnav? And how glorious he is in the eyes of the Lord and the eyes of the scripture. When we understand that sufficiently well, we will see the devotees in a different light. Oh, this may be a new devotee, old devotee, senior devotee, junior devotee, sannyasi, woman, man, child devotee, whatever else may be. Maybe all different categories of devotees, but devotee. And we will have such an, high, exalted understanding of their position, that automatically will be a strong barrier towards thinking of them in a mundane way and offending way. So let us pray to Nitai God Chandra and Radha Gopinath that we may be able to enhance our understanding of the glory of Krishna, the glory of Bhakti, and the glory of Bhakta. The more we understand the glory of the Lord, His devotional service, and His devotees, when you understand this, the glorious position of these three things, Bhagwan, Bhakta, and Bhakti, then we are going to be very, very safe in the midst of all these offensive environment. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Comments.
Hare Krishna. I am not able to understand two points. One is about Roop Kaviraj, which you mentioned, that he was on the Prem platform, that is on the highest standard. When a person is on the very high standard of pure bhakti, even if by accidentally he might have done the offense on the Mataji, but because on the highest love platform, Prem platform, it is quite natural that he will go and approach and ask forgiveness. It's very natural. When a person is on the Prem platform, he will be always be thinking everybody is a great soul and he is very, very low for all. Then why is it so that a person who is on the plain platform has not asked forgiveness to that Mataji? And second thing which I am not able to understand is, by taking the example of Indra and all the demigods, when Indra is making a mistake, what is the fault of other demigods? That I am not able to see. The same example is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. When Ramchandra Khan is taking an offense to Nityananda Prabhu, it is Ramchandra Khan who has made an offense, but why the whole village has to suffer? So this is completely feeling very contradictory. When one person is making a mistake, he should suffer, absolutely. But what is the fault of other devotees or other people as such? So these two points, can you clarify it?
We cannot separate the master and the servant. The master and servant are one unit. Therefore, in these cases which we are quoting, Ramchandra Khan, he is the master. He is the lord of that particular village. He is a zamindar. And everyone in that area is his, are his servants. Indra is the master. All demigods are his. Is Devendra. So all, everyone else is his, are his servants. Right? So, what is inflicted upon the master is shared automatically by the servants. Automatically. That's also one of the laws of nature. So in this case, we find that when the master is offended, the reaction is shouldered also by all his servants. It is transferred automatically. There are, I think, many examples of this about how the reaction transfers. In Ramchandra Khan's case, there was looting and there was riots and there was all these things happened over there because they were being governed by a person who is of a very offensive mentality. So somehow, because you are associating with such a person, you share a reaction. That means when you are connected to offensive person very intimately, it is dangerous because if he does some mistake, you are going to get a fallout of that. As I said, the bomb may drop in one place, but it spreads. The bomb dropped on Indra. The curse was on Indra. But the fallout was on all people who were connected to him. Ramchandra Khan was, the bomb dropped on him, but all those who connected with him also suffered. So, that means that we must be very careful. I think the message here is to be careful in associating with the person who is of that type. We should not ask. Therefore, it said asasanga tyaga ai vaishnavachar. A vaishnavachar means that when Mahaprabhu was asked, who is a Vaishnav? This is the answer he gave. He didn't give a positive answer. He negated the negative. He said that do not associate with a person who is associating with a who's asatsangi, who's a non-devotee. So this actually is Vaishnava behavior. So if we are in touch with somebody who is offensive, we should withdraw. Especially in the position of being master and servant. And within a moment we can see that. Some examples are there. A master becoming offensive and his otherwise faithful servants suffering reaction. Prema platform. That story is basically, as far as I can understand, is to show the subtlety of pride. How subtle this anartha is actually. And also the dangerous position of being very, very respected. The more you are respected, this Kaviraj story tells us about the perils of being respected, the perils of becoming too much of a scholar. In one sense, you see, like this story is there about Giriraj Maharaj told this story about Prabhupada, that Giriraj Maharaj met a person who knew Prabhupada, and he challenged Giriraj Maharaj, said that I actually am a bigger scholar than Bhaktivedanta Swami, because I know more, much more than him. This Giriraj Maharaj was told by a life member. A life member met another person who said that I am a bigger scholar than Bhaktivedanta Swami. The life member said, yes, you are a bigger scholar than Bhaktivedanta Swami, but you are not more humble. So the glory is actually not in being a Kaviraj. Who is the glorious devotee? The most glorious devotee is that devotee who is most humble. And not one who is sitting on the dais, speaking lectures, giving Vaishnava Siddhanta. And he may be in ecstatic symptoms, but if he is not fully conversant with practicing all the principles of humility. So constant practice of humility is what makes a person. So we respect that person, we respect everybody, but our respect should be to the maximum for that person who actually is truly humble. Because he actually is the greatest.
My understanding is that unless and until you are not humble, you cannot reach to the Prem platform. Prem platform is the topmost platform in Krishna consciousness. How can you not show your humility and Krishna is going to give that Prema Bhakti to you?
This shows that no, this story is basically, we can keep analyzing it, but this story, as far as I understand, is to show that till you go back to Godhead, there is a danger. Till you go to the spiritual sky and you are located at Krishna's lotus feet, as long as the material world is so much vitiated with offensive mentality all around us, that till you are in the mode, still you are associating with the material nature, that insignificant small possibility is always there that we will be affected by it. You cannot be safe in this material world, truly. Only say, until you go back to Godhead, we can fall down. That means we have to be very, very careful at all times. That's what the message actually is. No person is safe. Nobody is safe. Any other devotees can give comments also. Sri Sashtangam Prabhu and others. Obviously, this is a very deep pastime. This story has got much more to it than just superficial, offensive things. There's much more to it than that. And that can be analyzed and understood deeply. But there's a lot to learn, definitely, from this pastime. Become more careful. Savdhan. Borrow Savdhan. So, generally, women, brahmacharis, sannyasis, it's easy to respect them, because we're judging people externally. Here, this person is judging a person externally. It's a woman, Mataji. A woman, so what? Even a sannyasi will bow down. One of our Mataji's, she was having cancer and she was suffering mortally, very badly. But in the pain of her cancer and her absorption in Srimad Bhagavatam, she became so much, you know, immersed in her devotional service to Radha and Krishna and Srila Prabhupada that even big sannyasis and GBCs of our movement would come and bow down in front of her and take her blessings. The genuine devotees understand that, you know, woman, man, has nothing to do. Even a child can have prema bhakti and highest Narayani, Prahlad, you know, there are exalted devotees even in a child's body. So now we have this judging mentality, we are always judgmental, right? We think he is exalted and therefore he must not be. So here we find this, maybe because of his judgmental mentality, he made a mistake and he fell down. He was judging. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.